It is the Friends Are Foreman Animation Forum Claps.
Yes. We're back again for another exciting week of Animation Talk and Animators Talking.
Brought to you by the Animation World Network.
AWN.com.
The official, unofficial podcast of that.
Is us.
Me and Alan.
Yeah. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Hey, Joel.
Alan.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm doing all right. It's summertime, dude.
It's starting to get steamy.
Yeah.
Hot.
It's really hot. It's hot.
People are anxious.
Yeah. And excited.
Like you're prancing on a tin roof and you can't make a foothold.
You feel the excitement in the air.
You feel it. You want to do something about it.
You breathe it.
What do you do?
Do you drink it?
Do you
eat it?
Do you dance it off?
Do you
work it out?
Do you sing it off?
Do you tap it down? Do you gymnastics it around?
Yeah.
Do you belly dance it through?
Plate spin it around.
Do you get jiggy with it?
No.
No.
No, no, no.
Do you get gidget with it?
Maybe. Now, you just said get jiggy with it.
Yeah.
Kind of a shame that you said that, but it reminded me of a conversation that we were having last night. Last night, we had some folks over to our Brooklyn studio.
Yeah.
For a little party.
It was.
It was a lot of fun.
It was a 4th of July Eve party.
The Eve of the July of the 4th. And there was some Will Smith talk going on.
Oh, my goodness.
We were talking about movies and Will Smith and how they're making another Men in Black film.
Yeah.
Third? How many have they made?
I don't know.
A fifth, a 17th.
Alan.
What?
It doesn't matter. You know why?
Why?
I really think that we've done it.
Who's done it? What do you mean? What have we done?
As humans, we've succeeded.
As
we did
people,
it. Good for us.
What did we do?
We have finished making films.
We're done. There's no more films?
We should be congratulated as a species.
Yeah.
We did it. We have made enough films for the rest of humanity
Wow. That's quite a statement.
Well, I mean, if you look at it, all the sequels. We have so much material in our cinema library.
Yeah.
That we're good. I mean, obviously, the people who are in charge of these studios who greenlight projects, they know this very well.
Yeah.
We don't need to make anything new. Look at what we have.
We've got a summer full of remakes and relaunches.
Endless.
And sequels.
Endless remakes.
And you know what else a lot of movies don't have?
Base.
Prequels.
We have endless remakes with endless prequels. Endless sequels.
Yeah.
Sequels.
Right. Do you think that's going to be it? That's it? It's over?
I think we're done. Why bother? And look at all the comic books. A whole century of literature to remake.
Yeah, there's a lot of books, too, that could be made into movies that haven't been made into movies.
I think they're done. It's too late. Anything that's already been made, keep going. I mean, look at the blockbuster of an Iron Man.
Okay, I'm looking
at
it.
Just look at it.
Yeah.
Look at the blockbuster of Men in Black 7.
Yeah.
It'll make money, and the people in charge realize that. It's all about money. Why put anything new out there? Why take the risk?
I don't know, man.
Simple.
Yeah.
It's like math.
Well, Hollywood, I hope you're listening. I guess we don't need you.
I guess
we need them to make sequels and remakes. But they
what
don't
do you want to see? Remade. Best thing, remade.
That'll
make money.
Well, they already sort of remade Superman.
Yeah. Oh, and that was such a gift to humanity at large.
Yeah. Are they going to keep up with that franchise? I mean,
I can't wait. You know, one that they're going to make for sure.
Yeah, what's that?
Star Wars. They'll remake Star Wars? Episode 1 or 4, depending on your perspective. They'll remake that. They just wait. I mean, why not? You'd make so much money. I'm sure it's in the works already. They'll take a hot director, or maybe it'll be George Lucas. Who knows?
I think they're going to remake Jaws. Because Jaws,
yeah,
as you know,
is not is the best of, Steven Spielberg movie.
Well, I think it is, but it's
E.T.
It, whatever. But it was the original summer blockbuster.
Okay.
That movie changed summer movies forever.
Okay.
And I think that is the best one to remake. You could re-change summer movies forever.
How would you...
With a remake.
Who would you cast in the remake as the shark?
Probably Kenny the Shark.
And who would you cast as the boat?
I would probably cast Michelle Fox as the boat.
Who would you pair with her to play the water?
Gerard Butler.
Perfect. Easy choice.
Yeah.
So I'm just excited that we're done. Yeah. Takes the pressure off. I don't feel like I make any more animated films or my own live action films.
Don't have to write anything anymore.
No, don't have to think.
Phew. What a relief.
But you know what they, what still has a future, Alan?
No, what's that?
Podcastery.
Yeah.
In fact, I'll go as far as to say this. Podcasts are in the early stages of their birth.
When are we going to remake a podcast?
Oh, Alan. Great question.
Or a sequel.
Oh, Alan. This is amazing.
Could we do a sequel to our podcast?
Sure.
Let's just say today's episode is the first in a series of sequels.
Is this the prequel or the sequel?
No, this is the Friends Are Forum and Animation Forum 2.
Okay.
Ooh. The sequel. But we have to have a good, like, subtitle, you know? So, Friends Are Forum and Animation Forum 2, The Reckoning.
How about...
Or something like that, you know?
FFAF, FFAF. Multiplied it by itself.
Yeah, yeah.
The Reckoning.
Yeah, The Reckoning.
FAF, The Return.
FAF 2, The Reckoning. FAF 2, Return of FAF.
How about The Wrath of FAF?
Oh, I like it. I like it.
Early 20th century.
Okay.
You had the rise of cinema, the rise of animation, Dada.
Uh-huh.
You had surrealism.
Right.
You had smallpox.
Where are you going with this?
I'm just saying right now, podcasts are in their infant stage. Alan, we are at the forefront. We could be podcast pioneers.
I can't wait to get started. Let's do it right now.
Why wait?
Yeah. I think this episode is going to be a little sexier, a little spicier.
How so?
Because of our guest.
Who do we have?
We have Signe Bauman.
Oh, wow.
And she tells it like it is.
She does tell like it is, and very few people do.
She's a truthsayer.
Why delay it any further?
Yeah, let's bring her in here.
Computer. History happening now.
Yeah.
Computer, summon Signe Bauman. There she comes.
Is. Hello, she's coming in.
Ooh. Look at you
welcome,
guys.
Welcome, wow. Welcome.
What a space. Yes.
Isn't it spacious?
Wow, yeah. That is like a palace.
Kind of deceiving.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's kind of like the TARDIS.
Yeah. This, look at that. My God.
Spare no expense.
What is the most amazing thing that you can see in this room, would you say?
Well, you do.
Thank
you.
Thank you. Yeah, that was the right answer. Alan, is that the right answer?
That is the right answer. Yes. You got it right.
Yes.
Yeah, you look very nice.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The decoration of any room, I'd say. I take you home.
Thanks. Wait, me or Alan?
Oh, can't I have both?
That we could arrange it. It is the Friends Are Forum and Animation Forum.
Yeah, we are a package deal.
Yeah.
All
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
All right.
We can do, you know, animation workshops. Alan's pretty good at fixing pipes.
Ooh.
If you have toilet problems, I can handle that.
I have those, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty good at, I can come up with a nice tape mural using different colored tapes.
Well, I have a lot of wall space.
All right.
Very welcome, all right. Yeah.
All right.
Guys, so that's it. I scoop you up and take you home.
All right.
Okay. All right, well, bye, everybody.
All right, see you later. All right. Wait a second, though. I think...
What?
I think we
what
owe
we,
it...
What did we miss? Did we forget something?
No.
All right.
I'm curious, Signe.
All right.
To find out more about you.
Okay, so you want to do a job interview. You don't want to come with me unless you know more about me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Playing it safe. I like to get to know people first, you know?
All right, so you to make sure I'm not this, like, lonely rapist.
Right. I mean, that is actually in our manifesto of our podcast. We want to make sure all of our guests are not lonely rapists.
Okay.
All first right. and foremost.
That's okay. Let's do it.
Because then you're, like, on the same playing field. So, now, as we know, you are an animation artist.
All right.
You make animations. You actually make art. In general.
Okay. Is that...
Yeah, yeah, I know.
Okay.
Yeah, so here's a question for you. Well, what do you think of the term animation artist as opposed to animator?
You know, it is a very good question because I haven't figured it out. When I started it, when I started to work in animation in 1989, when I just graduated from Moscow University Philosophy Department, I started to work as a cell painter in the studio. And every time, and I sort of was self-conscious because I was like painting cells. I was like doing nothing really creative, right? But it was sort of for me a starting position to get higher positions like directing or stuff. Just finding out more about animation. And so people said, so what do you do? It was very difficult for me to answer, what do I do? So I would say, I am in animation, right?
Mm-hmm. In animation.
Uh-huh. And then when I directed my first film, and I directed, I designed, I wrote it, I animated it, you know, I did these things, and I color, again, cell painted it. So now again, people say, so what do you do? What should I say, I'm a writer, animator, you know, director in animation, or how does that happen, right? So I say, I am in animation. It took me about 10 years to kind of say, okay, everybody says I'm an animator, so I guess I should say I'm an animator, but it is somewhat limiting because I don't only animate. I write, design, I produce even my films. So I think the correct answer would be I am in animation. If you say, are you an animation artist? Well, that is only one part of what I do. So I guess the right title would be I am an independent animator. Mm. Mm-hmm. But then it would not reflect the other things that I do, which I do papier-mâché sculptures. So, but I'm not calling myself a sculptor. Papier-mâché sculptures are only the way for me to make money, to make more of my independent films. So it's sort of weird.
And is anyone truly an independent animation filmmaker or independent animator? Because all of us are dependent on people watching it.
Well, I mean,
well, I think that has to do more with the making of it, not the screening it.
I look at the big picture always.
Oh yeah. Oh, I forgot.
And
I forgot.
I'm very keen on accurate labeling.
Right.
Sometimes it doesn't make any difference to the world at large. But I'm just saying, you know, what if? And it's rhetorical.
Well, you know, if you want to be really anal, I guess, then there
and
is...
And I do.
Yes. Yeah. So then you have to come to my bathroom.
Okay. And expel.
And expel, yes. Okay. But, you know, the independent animator, it's like, you know, you do what you feel like doing 80%, and then 20% you do what you think your audience wants, or you want to, how you think you would engage audience. So in most part, 80% is pretty good percentage of independence. I don't know. I mean, for my standards, but obviously maybe not for yours.
Here's a question.
All right.
Do you think you have to, if you're making time-based work,
right,
you have to consider the audience?
I do. I think that's like, if I didn't consider, you know, audience, that would be like a lonely rapist.
Yes.
It's like you asking like what group of 100 people in a dark room to sit through the horror of 10 minutes that never ends, and you're not presenting any ideas or any visual engagement. That is very close to rape, as I could say. Wow. I mean, maybe even, I wouldn't say worse, okay, but it's really, you're asking a lot. So yes, you do have to care for people. You do present, you know, like I always say when people say, I don't really care for audience. I make a film, if it's good for me, good for my friends, it's good for everybody. And people say that. And I'm like, well, do you ever tell a really good joke in an empty room?
Mm.
Do you sit in one room, you close your doors, you're sitting alone, and you're telling your joke, mm-hmm. and then you're laughing at the punchline? I mean, how would you even laugh at the punchline? It's the audience who makes the punchline. It's the audience, the engagement, it's the telling, it's the process of telling that makes the story what it is. So if you claim that you don't care for audience, then you better sit in a dark room alone and tell joke after joke to fucking yourself.
And would you make a children's book that's just blank pages, not even numbered?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I would.
Would you do that?
Well, I think Alan I would. Might.
That would be, of course, daring conceptual.
Yeah.
You know, there are, like, conceptual things like that. You know, there's that famous movie, you know, the Empire State Building.
Andy Warhol.
Yeah, exactly. Who does just, like, 24 hours of... Is that a film? Is that what... It's an interesting concept, as a concept. I just don't want to sit through the 24 hours.
And that one, the film itself is the audience.
Yeah.
And the projector.
Right.
I just made that up. Now, you are a world-renowned animation filmmaker.
Who says?
It said that on your bio.
Internet.
It was like
the
first thing you wrote on your bio, which is weird.
I didn't write it.
No, I'm just kidding. So you've made several films going way back to the early 90s.
Yes.
These are some of my favorites. The Dentist. Teat Beat of Sex. Birth. What's a common theme in all of these? Where do you derive some of your ideas from?
The life, I guess. But I mean, my main interest, of course, is the relationship of body and our spiritual essence. And I also want to find the truth of existence. Like, you know, like we humans always live through the life and we try to beautify it and we kind of say, you know, things that are not true. You know, like we live kind of in a fantasy. It's like the purpose of Teat Beat of Sex is to just tell the truth about how does it feel to be a woman and actually have the pussy juice and have to deal with that, and where a man is kind of deluded by his expectations caused by all this, you know, media or, you know, commercials or whatever, that he kind of doesn't put one and one together. So he wants the pussy to be shaven. He wants pussy to be not panted up, you know, he wants it. And then he wants the woman to walk around like that. So now, for me, it doesn't make sense, because if you want a really, really good sex, you have to have a woman who has a lot of pussy juice, because it also denotes that she's aroused and she is easily to arouse and she has plenty of fluids, right? And then also the pussy hair thing is another thing that upsets me, because people demand to shave the pussy hair off. Although, you know, if you shave the pussy hair off, you woman loses sensitivity in certain areas.
Are you saying this is what the average male prefers?
In general. I'm generalizing, because I encountered...
Mass media.
I encountered all kinds of men, and they have all these strange ideas. And the other thing that upsets me about pussy hair is that if you want your woman not to have any pussy hair, any whatsoever genital hair, you better... It means that you want to have sex as 12-year-old, prepubescent. You know, pussy hair is there to denote that the woman is sexually ripe. She's ready. Her hormones are fine. And she should be fucked, right? While if she doesn't have pussy hair, it says, well, she's still a girl. Shouldn't be touched.
Doesn't that also apply to some fruit, like peaches?
The hairy peaches.
Yeah.
What do you feel about hairy peaches?
Isn't that when they're not ripe yet?
Is it
the opposite?
When they're hairy?
Yeah.
No, they always have a little fuzz on them.
Doesn't that go away? Maybe it's when they are ripe they have the
peaches. Maybe you should shave your peaches before you eat them.
Yeah. I always, you pervert. I mean, I always at least, you know, give it a good wash. So, your films,
right?
Teat Beat of Sex in particular.
Okay.
How many episodes are there?
15.
Okay.
Wow.
It kind of serves as a PSA, actually, in a lot of ways. From the women's perspective about sex, would you agree?
Yes, it's I would say PSA. Go ahead.
Could you call them P-sexes? It doesn't really work.
No. Public sex announcements. That kind of is.
Yeah, good word. Yeah. Public sex announcements. Yeah. Unfortunately, I have to say, I went around the town offering the Teat Beat of Sex, because I thought it was really sellable, great idea, you know, and I thought it was funny enough and entertaining enough and educational enough for people to be interested to see these things. I have actually 55 episodes in my head. But, you know, it takes time and money to render them.
Yeah.
So I went around and I shopped around and I wanted, you know, someone invest in next 50 episodes. Turns out television right? Like you go to television. I'm not mentioning what channels I went to, right? But they all say, this is really funny. This is extremely funny. But we want something that males of age 18 and 21 would want. Yeah. And they don't want to know about that women have pussy juice. They want to know about, you know, like they want a fantasy. They don't want a reality. They want to know that all the women want them. They don't want to hear that women have like lives on their own. And I was like, what am I supposed to do? I cannot change. The whole idea of Tidbit of Sex is to tell the truth, how it feels to be a woman.
And I think they're wrong. I think males 18 to 25 actually do enjoy seeing your films.
Yeah, and I...
That's not what this executives of the TV stations think. Right. I mean...
Who? I want names.
No,
give me
can't.
Names.
I can't. All right.
Never mind.
It's discretion. I signed some papers.
Never, don't sign anything ever.
All right.
I never signed anything.
I didn't, but you know, it's sort of.
Alan
know.
Has a stamp for his signature now.
I do. It's just a rubber stamp.
Oh, so that is how you avoid signing papers?
Oh, yeah.
You say, oh, I can't, right?
It's because not even my name.
If you want to, yeah. It's just, and it's not even words.
Yeah.
What is it? What's
just
the picture?
Me.
Of?
Yeah.
Oh, me.
It's a picture of his face.
Yeah.
Now, in your films, what I found to be very interesting, technically, is that you're doing everything by hand. Or are you?
Ooh, am I?
Mystery.
Oh, everything. Well, The Dentist was the last film in 2005 that I shot on 35mm film. So that was, everything was by hand, including shot by shot.
Cell?
Cells, wow. Yes, cell paint, and then the camera, 35mm print.
And edited on film?
And I didn't have to edit it. Okay. I just sliced it together. Because I did, actually, all right, so for Dentist, I did the line test on computer. So when I had the exposure sheets in the end, exposure sheets were exactly how I shot them, so I just sliced them together. You know, four rolls I had, right. And I sliced them together. The one thing that I was shooting on 35, that one thing that really put me off, and I felt it was like a sign from above, was that when I was shooting for a week, you know, 4-minute roll, you know, to shoot it takes a time. And when I was done and I went to lab and I dropped it off, it turned out that there was a hair in the shutter.
Yeah.
And so it was like flickering. And I had to reshoot everything, and I had to pay for a new film roll. So I was like, I don't know, I can't explain the feelings. It was worse than breakup.
Yeah, I know the feeling.
I once shot where everything was right in the computer. It was an On the Oxbury shooting drawn images onto 35. The computer was controlling the motion of the camera. And it said that the one shutter was closed. It was actually open. So I shot for 12 hours. I sent it off to the lab, shipped it back, looked at it. Every other frame was exposed. Checkerboard. Not even my fault. It was something in this old software that said it was open and it wasn't.
Oh.
That happened to me. That happened to me,
hurts.
Too. I shot half a roll. It was totally black because the shutter wasn't working properly.
So,
not even. I mean, talk about being anal, which we were before.
Yeah.
I mean, I was doing everything correctly.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Completely anal retentive to the point where I was retaining other people's fluids.
He was.
And still, the gods said, no, you're not going to have this work the first time. You need to go through this rite of passage.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to do it.
Reshooting.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, the computers don't really save you from that either.
Yes.
No.
Go ahead.
Because, you know, things crash.
Oh, yeah.
And then the hard drives crash, the access to hard drives. I mean, all this shit can happen with computers. So there's no really safe way to do anything. It's like life, you know.
Yeah.
You are born and then you just try to avoid being hit by a car, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? It's like being on a parachute. And you're floating down to Earth. You're trying to enjoy it as you can, but you know you're gonna hit the bottom eventually.
Yeah.
But you have the parachute.
Yeah, the glider.
I mean, you have the parachute, so you're not gonna like die.
You're not gonna die.
When
I mean,
it touches the ground. So how is that comparable?
Because all of the ground is a giant landmine.
Well, you didn't say that at the beginning of.
Isn't it implied in your life?
No.
When you think about it.
Is it? I didn't think about
it. And you never asked about the freestyle parachute divers that have wings, like flying squirrels. They can control where they're going. Are they living life better? Here's another question for you.
All right.
Your thoughts, the animated short versus the animated long. What do you think?
Well, it's a very good question because I really believe in short form. I believe that there is, I mean, that is like the best form there is because, you know, it, especially animation can express so many ideas in such a short time. And, you know, like, what is a feature film? Feature film is watered down short, you know.
Because, watered down?
Watered down. I mean, or watered up, I don't know, okay. Really. But but anyway, so when you look at one short film, like a really good animated short film, it's just so amazing. And you can explore, like, all these different techniques. You can't explore different techniques in a feature film because people want continuity. People want, like, reality. But, you know, in a short film, you're so free to experiment, to do anything you want, anything crazy. You know, like, I did the Five Fucking Fables, for example, mm-hmm. 7-minute film. I would wake up in the morning, I wouldn't know what I would animate. And I would just start drawing it. And after a while, after you get in a groove, all of a sudden you feel like these characters from the paper are saying, we want to do this, we want to do that. And you just follow them. In a feature film, you're more constrained.
You have to have more structure.
Yes, you have to have more structure. You have to have arc. You have to have characters developed, you know. In short film, you can just go crazy. And I like that freedom. I like the freedom as a creator of the short film, and I like to watch short films. Like, you know, when you are in a short film program and you watch shorts, you're never gonna be stuck with something you don't like for too long, because then things stop and then they move on to another one. Unfortunately, people haven't found a way to make money on short films, mm-hmm. which is a tragedy. Everybody keeps saying all this new technology, you know, iPods, iPads, whatnot, right? All this new technology is gonna, like, needs the shorts, because nobody's gonna watch feature film on the subway. Mm-hmm. It's just a short little snappy things. Well, somehow it didn't pan out like this way. I mean, very few shorts make money. And if they even make money, that money is not so impressive, you know? And there are more and more people making shorts, I guess, and they're more and more desperate. People, like, use shorts as their calling card rather than as an ultimate kind of product. Which is, people say, oh, this is my short, I want to make a feature.
What are some of the options, though? I know you can't make a whole lot of money, but if you want to go through with the whole process, what can you do?
Meaning?
Distribution-wise. Like, what are some of, if you have an animated short, what are some possible options to make some money off of it?
Look, you know, you're asking the wrong person, because I never made much money off my shorts. There are, like, during this internet boom, there was some kind of little money here and there. People got, like, non-exclusive rights of some of my films, and then they all, like, kind of disappeared. I don't know. Like, I mean, there are, like, Bill Plimpton makes a lot of money with his shorts. Maybe not with his feature, but with shorts he makes money. There are other people. I guess Don Hertzfeld makes money with his mm-hmm. shorts, right? I personally don't make, my films don't really click with, like, millions of people. They click with hundreds of people. So obviously there is no, and so for me to say, oh, there's a definite formula for a short film, I cannot say that. Like, Bill Plimpton goes and says, oh, you know, there's a formula what short film should be to be a money-making short, which is short, cheap, and funny. That's what he says. Short, cheap, and funny. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, I understand short, I understand cheap, but I don't, what is funny? What is funny for me, it's not funny for, my films are very, you know, some of them are very short, some of them are very cheap, right? But what is funny for me, it turns out it's not funny for 3 million people.
I've mm-hmm. seen audiences watch your films at festivals, and everyone's laughing.
I know, they roll in their aisles.
Yeah.
But when you ask them to give me a dollar, they run away.
Yeah.
So you see, that is one thing that it's a mystery to me, how you make. So should you be actually thinking as an artist about the money before you even start making a film. Because I do want to, I use animation as a form of self-expression. And I understand that now in the long run, it has become a, like a bad habit, like heroin, you know, because all money,
exactly.
all money I get like from doing other things, I invest in this habit, you know, and I, but that's the kind of, I cannot live without this habit. It's my heroin. I need it. You know, so Bill, for example, Bill Plimpton, he does make money with his shorts and he invests that money into his habit, which is feature films. So we all have kind of imperfections, I guess.
Was that kind of the impetus behind Square Footage Films? Is that your baby?
Well, yeah, we, me and Pat Smith.
Okay.
We it was actually, I would say it was more than me and Pat Smith, because many years ago, what was it? What year was it? Jeez, like
1937.
No, no, 2004.
Oh,
1945.
Or something. We were standing on a rooftop drinking wine. Ilana Allen on in the Soho loft on a rooftop. And me and Frank Krause, we were talking about the DVDs and how DVDs are so expensive. At that time, they were more expensive to make. Was it 2001 or 2002? Jesus, that was so long ago. And we were drinking wine and thinking and getting drunker and whining about how we would like to have DVDs. And maybe we should pull together our resources and make a DVD where, you know, me, Fran, and some other bunch of people would be on and then just distribute around, you know, studios or something. Whatever, you know, like as a hazy idea that we had. And so Pat Smith passes by and we say, Pat, would you want to be on our DVD? And Pat Smith was just as hazy as us, but he had a really business mind. And he said, yes, I would like to be part of this thing, and we should invite Bill Plimpton, George Griffin, and then we should sell this for money. And I said, well, what a great idea. And all of a sudden, from this alcohol-induced haziness, came out Square Footage Films, which is the group, 11 animators. We met, like, we had a meeting, like, 11... No, like a week later, we 11 of us walked in into Bill Plimpton's studio and we sat down and we honed out the deal. Each of us gave like $200 to produce the DVD, and then we got back. Each of us got like 50 or 70 DVDs back, so we could either give them away for free or sell them. Mm-hmm. Bill successfully sold his DVDs for profit. Then I know Pez. Pez, he just gave them away to his friends, what not, you know, for his, I mean, you know, he didn't really need to sell them. And so me and Pat, we were selling. And so everybody was somewhat happy, I think.
Yeah, no, I mean, they did really well.
Well, they did. And then, but then we produced the other one, Avoid Eye Contact 2. Mm-hmm. We invited other people. And so, but then all of a sudden, I found myself trying to make a film and being in the distribution business, where I am actually, I mean, I don't mind, but I am do promote other people's work, right? But I want to make a film, and I say I'm a filmmaker, not a distributor. And that conflict got bigger and bigger because these two projects were fighting for time, and there is only so much time, right? And also selling DVD doesn't involve only selling it or like packaging and putting in a post office, you know, doesn't involve only that. You actually have to arrange special screenings. And I arranged a lot of those where we traveled all over the United States. We went to abroad with the shows. Mm-hmm. You have to put together 35 millimeter prints. You have to worry about it. You have to email to the festivals. It become like almost full-time job. So I had to, at one point, you sort of say, okay, so what do I do? Am I a distributor? I'm a filmmaker. So then Pat said, let's do another DVD. Let's do a DVD called Animators from Hell. All these like dark kind of animated cartoons, you know, where all these like dark things happen. And what a great idea, right? What a great idea. Or like sex animation, right? What a great idea. Do I have time for it?
Yeah, I mean, it is hard to not only make an animated short to begin with, to put it out there requires a lot of effort, a lot of money, a lot of time, becomes another project. And then the additional third part to be your own distributor is a lot to do for one person.
It is.
I mean, the caveat to all that is that you actually can if you're willing to do it, but it's making you to devote all your time.
Yeah.
And more to it. Well, and other things.
Yeah, that's, you know, like 2 days ago, I ran into this live action short filmmaker, a really nice guy, and he was telling how he fundraised his film through GoGo Indie or IndieGoGo, you know?
Oh, really?
And he raised $6,000. And but he said it took so much effort. It took a lot of Facebooking.
Yeah, a lot of emailing.
A lot of tweeting.
Yeah.
And constant updating of the site of his, you know, page. And then he was promising something to all these donators. He was donators.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He was promising kind of little thing like T-shirt or like logo or a poem because he's a poet, right? And so all of a sudden he found himself standing in a line in post office while he should be working his film. And then I said, but did you calculate how many hours did you work on this fundraising and how does that relate to your $6,000? Because I said, if you made $50 an hour, that's still worth it. But mm-hmm. if you made $8 an hour, then you would be better off getting a job, you know? So,
yeah.
And so that is the question where I always have to be really, really careful how much time, how much money for each hour that I invest in something else, how much money do I get back for it? You know, I mean...
So how do you, Signa, do it? How do you make a living?
I prostitute.
Okay.
Wow.
I mean, that's the fallback for most of us.
Yeah. Do you really want to know?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So I do anything for money, right? I mean, I'm lucky that I didn't have to do sex for money, right? That's pretty lucky. But I do anything else, right? So when the friend of a friend, you know, said, and he's in Italy, a designer, and he has a store, and he said, I really like your films, and what could you do for me, for my store? Can you do mural? And I never done a mural. You know, my drawings are like this big, you know, like my watercolors.
About the size of a Frisbee?
Yeah.
And I said, so how much do you pay? And he said, oh, you know, like $10,000 for a mural. Like, you know, huge, huge mural, right? Yeah. I'm like, all right, sure, I do it. And I'm flipping out. I have no idea how to do it, right? So then I ask around some people what paint to use, what, you know, I mean, you know artists, and they say, oh, that's easy. Murals are easy. So then I go there to Italy, in Milan, and I'm standing there in front of this huge wall.
How big?
Shitting my pants. I mean, you know, like wall from here till your patio or longer. You
so,
know?
Mm-hmm. I mean, 40 you know, by 20?
I don't know anything.
Okay.
Honestly, you
big.
Know, big. You know, like anything bigger than a cell is big. Okay. So I was flipping out, but I did it, right? I did it, and it didn't look bad. So this guy now says, you know, I really like your work, and you do like, you know, sculptures. And I did like I used to do like small little like things from this powdery thing that you can buy in.
Plaster of Paris?
No, not plaster of Paris, but it was like kind of like a paper mache mixed in like a powder.
Okay.
And then you make a small little things. And I enjoy doing them, but, you know, I stop because who am I? I'm an animator. So he says, can you do sculptures? Like, you know, something like three-dimensional. And I said, sure, I can do that. He says, yeah, but I need them big. Can you make like your size, like as tall as you? And I'm thinking, no, I can't. But I say, how much you're paying? He says, you know, depending, but, you know, I pay well. So I said, okay, I'll do it. So again, I never touched the, paper mache. And I have no idea how to do it. I have no concept of how paper mache works, right? And he says to me, it has to be paper mache. It has to be huge. How do you do huge paper mache? So I did it. I did it. I've stuck the boxes together. I taped them together. I've wrapped them with a newspaper. And I made strange characters. And I posted the pictures of it on my Facebook page. So you can look it up. But anyway, so that's how I made my money for last 2 years. And then one day, he says to me, Signe, you know, my store now looks like Signe Bauman Museum. You should find another client. So now I am thinking, well, I have money to live till September, right? You know,
yeah,
but after September, what I'm gonna eat and pay rent with. So I have
maybe,
to find...
Maybe he needs some sculptures for his house. Or a mural in his bedroom.
He look, you know, he has so many sculptures. I think he has like 25 or 30. So
wow. All right.
That's pretty much enough. He's like set for life with my sculptures.
Well, so if any of our listeners want to hire you to do murals or sculptures for them.
Look, you know, if you approach me directly and I wouldn't charge you like finder's fee, you know.
Right.
So you get them.
It's a deal.
What?
It's a deal.
It's a deal, yeah. It's a steal.
Yeah.
To actually have you. Because, you know, one thing, somebody told me, Signe, why don't you replicate? You know, the sculptures are amazing, but if you like made them a little bit smaller and you just did the same sculpture, like version of the same sculpture, you can actually sell thousands of them. And I was like, you know, I'm an artist. You know what is the definition between artist and a factory woman? Mm. Is that a factory woman is able to do same thing over and over, right? Uh-huh. While an artist gets bored of doing same thing over and over. That's why I'm not holding 9-to-5 job. I don't really care to do the same thing over and over. So if I do something, I have to have that anxiety of unknown. I have to have the thing, will I succeed, will I not, right? This is completely new thing. I don't know the form. Like, how is it going to come out? I need that. So the moment I know what I'm doing, I'm bored. I'm not interested.
We were talking about this off mic before, but I was going to bring it up. You are now working on a feature film. Is it your first that you've created feature film?
Yeah, it's my first feature film. I was intrigued with the longer form just because the challenge it poses. It poses a challenge of the freaking structure that I hate, the freaking discipline that I hate. So I am thinking if I could like make a feature film with the structure of the narrative, of the story I tell, but still stay away from storyboards. I hate storyboards. Mm, mm-hmm. Because storyboards, when you do the storyboards, it's like dead for you. For me, the project is dead. I already know. It already happened, you know? So and then you feel like an accountant. Every day you come in and you say, oh, scene 32.1. I am rendering it now. Okay. I did 20 drawings. Okay. I hate that. I need every day the challenge and anxiety. So I don't do storyboards. So I was thinking, how about if I do feature with no storyboards? So let's see what happens.
What's your process?
It's just in the head. It's like keeping it fluid and open. Like yesterday, I made a set, you know, of the room, and I know exactly what I want it to be, but I don't know exactly what angles I want, and so it depends on the light. It depends what the other person in the room suggests. It depends on how I feel at the moment, you know, and keep it fluid.
Well, I don't know how much you want to talk about it, but what is kind of the overall idea of your film?
Oh, the funny film about depression?
Yeah.
Oh. No, I mean, look, you know, like everyone else, my family has a huge history of insanity. You know, there are like all these suicides, all these mysterious disappearances, all this mysterious kind of... breakdowns, mental breakdowns of my cousins, of aunts, and myself. You know, I, you know, was diagnosed with some horrible mental affliction when I was 22, and I was put in a mental hospital, and they told me I would never walk and talk without these pills. You know, and so for me, the interest is like, how do you live with the mental kind of disease? And is that mental thing inherited? And how much of this mental kind of disease or affliction is your circumstances? And can you beat your circumstances? Mm-hmm. And can you beat the mental affliction? Which I feel I have beaten it. I mean, so far, I live day by day. I don't know what's going to be tomorrow because I do live with the thought of hanging myself every day. It's like there's no... Actually, if I think of sex every 9 seconds, I think of hanging myself every 8 seconds. Hmm. So maybe they are somehow related. Like the sex and the death become like kind of forces that keep you alive, I guess. You know, like how between the two magnetic walls, like you put a little object and the object stays right in the middle. Right.
Homeostasis.
Right.
Yeah.
So that is like sex and death for me. I think, you know, for me, like the paradox is like, I think death is unacceptable. It should be abolished. I cannot imagine my own death. I mean, I can imagine, but I don't accept it. I really think it's preposterous that I have to die. And you guys, you can die. I mean, you know, I would cry. I would cry. It would be definitely big, huge loss, right? But it's nothing huge. Like my death. My death is inconceivable. But what is more inconceivable, that if I wasn't even born, and that the result that I was born is like totally coincidental,
yeah.
Because out of all these like zillions of sperm that my father flushed out of his body, why that one particular happened to, and how did the, I mean, how my existence is possible at all, and how, what would have happened if I didn't exist? You wouldn't be here, right?
Mm-hmm.
So all these things. At the same time, the suicide, though, is the way how to control your death. Right,
mm-hmm.
And so this is like kind of ultimate control freakness.
Ah, well, and what you're saying too is, you know, how it's even possible that any of us get to this point. I would say I think anyone could agree that that's kind of a magical thing. It's kind of nice that we don't know. That's a mysterious thing.
Yeah, anyway. The consciousness.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Would you say that your favorite animal is the bunny rabbit?
Yeah, the bunny is sweet. And I guess it represents kind of like innocence and innocence and muteness. Like mm-hmm. It's sort of helplessness.
Quiet.
Quiet, yeah. Yes. Observant. Because my bunnies never have mouth. They have just a heart and the eyes. And so it is somewhat, I don't know. It's like a...
Is the heart the mouth or the nose?
It's the heart.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Gotcha. Gotcha.
Alan, did I get her?
Yeah, you totally did.
It's okay.
It's the heart.
That's a better answer. I think she just got me.
Yeah, she just got you right back.
God,
yeah.
How did she do that?
She wins.
I hate to do this to you, Cigna, but a friend of ours...
Don't do it. Don't do it.
Yeah, don't do it, you asshole.
That's such an easy thing.
Yeah.
But we promised this again to our friends. They live down the street. They have a son.
Yeah.
He's 6 years old. His name is Isaac, and just to let you know, Cigna, he has a weird obsession with early pioneers of animation. We don't really know. We think he needs to get out more. His parents have asked us again to just let him come on, talk about what he needs to talk about, help his, you know, feelings, get himself out there. He needs to be more extroverted, they say. So we have him out there in the waiting room. Is it okay if we bring him in?
Sure.
Alan?
Is he in the waiting room?
Yeah.
Bring him in. He's hiding?
Computer. Yeah. Computer, go get Isaac. Okay.
All right, it's Isaac Short, everybody. Isaac is back. Hi, Isaac.
Why?
Just come on over to this microphone.
Which one?
Right. That one right over there by Joel.
This one right here?
Yeah, that one right there.
Okay. So,
hey, buddy.
Hi.
How's it going?
Hello.
I don't even know anymore.
Are you having a... What?
What's wrong?
What'd you say?
What's wrong?
Well, I don't even know why I'm here.
What do you mean you don't know why you're here? You mean in the grander sense of things? Like, why are we here? Yeah. Why do we exist?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isaac.
Well, you missed the conversation we were having earlier about that.
What's that?
Isaac, so last time you were here, you said you were going to go and have a thalmatrope play date. How did that go?
Yeah. It was kind of fun, but I made a dinosaur with a sword.
See, I knew it would work out.
Yeah. I like dinosaurs and swords.
Which you told us before.
Yeah, and there was a dinosaur on one side, and then there was a sword on the other, and you flipped it, and there was a sword going into a dinosaur.
Wow.
How exactly was the sword? Was he, like, stabbing himself?
No, just kind of going into his eyeball.
Oh.
Okay.
God, I hate children.
Hi. Why do you hate children?
Look at yourself.
I know, right?
I mean...
Yeah, now, I hate children, too.
Oh, good.
Wait, you hate children, too?
You hate aren't children. You? Aren't you 6 years old?
Yeah, but... Whatever.
All right. Now, Isaac, what are you doing these days? I mean, are you... You said you're going to work on a film about dinosaurs... and swords on the Lusitania. Was that?
Yeah. Well, I got kind of stuck, so I moved on to another project.
What's your new project?
Well, I'm making a Halloween costume.
Really? Whoa.
It's, well, okay.
It's a little early July, for that, but it must be a pretty complicated costume if you're starting about 6 months in advance.
Aren't you going to ask me what it is?
No.
Isaac, what is your costume?
I'm making a zoetrope.
A zoetrope costume.
Actually not half bad. That's a pretty good Halloween costume.
It depicts all of the work of Loda Riding Girl.
Really?
Okay, now...
Okay.
Signa, this is what we're talking about before. Isaac has this weird obsession, and we're a little concerned. So, Loda Reitinger,
She made stop motion, she made silhouette films with puppets, and she was the first person to make a full-length animated feature!
Isaac, go and get life. Nope. Why do you know
Isaac,
these things?
I know, right? Gee,
that's sick.
It's great.
Where do you watch these?
It's called Prince Ahmed. Loda Reitinger.
Where do you watch these things? You must have a crazy film library at home and a projector and a home theater. I mean, where do you see these things?
My teatro optique.
Yeah, all right.
He has an optical theater. Okay.
Sure.
Now, Isaac, I mean, I'm a little concerned about how you view things. I mean, what, besides animation, what are some of the things you play with?
Well, sometimes I have hoop and stick play dates.
Hoop and stick.
Hoop and stick.
Okay. What is it, the Dust Bowl here?
Sure. And sometimes I have Kick the Can playdates. Kick the Can.
All right.
Okay, yeah.
And sometimes I have Potato Baby playdates.
Potato Baby playdates. What's a Potato Baby?
Well, you take a potato.
Yeah.
And you make a little baby out of it using bottle caps or asbestos.
Asbestos. Your parents let you play with asbestos? Maybe they're actually... quite bright. His parents sound like smart people.
We actually need to talk to our friends because this is very...
Isaac, how about this? Who are you going trick-or-treating with this year? Do you have a group that you go with?
Yeah,
okay. Who is it? Who do you go with?
Well, I usually go over and pick up my friend Arthur Melbourne Cooper, and then we go over and get George Malaise, and then we all gather together then over at the Lumiere Brothers house, and then we all go trick-or-treating!
Now, those are
all dead filmmakers.
Dead filmmakers from the turn of the century. Last century, 20th century.
Yeah.
We need, we had Alan. Yeah. We had a little 6-year-old Rex Knaus Frenzer on the show.
Yeah, maybe he should hang out with Rex.
What's that?
Rex
He's
is a boy.
He's a kid that's your age exactly. And
He's
he doesn't,
a boy your
he
age.
Plays with things like Legos.
And he draws a lot. You guys could make
Legos?
A film together.
I don't like him.
What are you? You don't even know him.
Well, I gotta go.
The cruelty of children.
Why do you have to go? Why do you have to go?
Well, I have a lunch date.
A lunch date with whom?
That's bizarre.
Just myself. Lunch date with myself.
Yes.
I have a lunch date with myself.
I think Isaac is gonna learn about depression very early on.
Isaac,
it's gonna hit him like a big wave.
Yeah.
What's that? What?
The depression.
What's depression? I don't understand.
It's like a salad.
Okay. Wait, I don't like salad.
Without dressing.
What?
What are you going to eat for your lunch?
Well, whatever is in my humorous faces of funny faces lunchbox. Gotta go! Bye!
Okay.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, Isaac.
Goodbye.
Bye, Isaac.
Oh, Jesus.
Humorous faces of funny faces lunchbox. That kid's weird.
Yeah.
Anyway,
he knows too much.
He does know too much,
and
but
yet too little.
Little about life. Yeah. Signa, it has been a pleasure having you here today. Has it been a pleasure to be here?
Well, it has been, but are you now? Do you approve my request to take you home?
Yes.
Am I like a rapist, the lonely rapist for your standards?
We are supportive of all of our fans, people listening to the show, guests on the show.
Yeah. And besides, you don't seem like a lonely rapist. You seem like a friendly
you
rapist.
You do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you
seem like a giving rapist.
Yeah. Yeah. Like very giving and forgiving.
Yeah. Good.
So you're coming?
Sure.
Yeah. All right. We'll go. Yeah.
Do you have a website that we can put up on our site?
Yes, it's www.signebaumannet.com.
Okay.
All right.
And then I have teatbeat.com.
Teatbeat.com. We'll put them both up.
And then also Facebook.
Okay.
You can be my friends on Facebook.
All right. We'll put those up and people can go and maybe commission you for more murals and giant sculptures.
Yay!
And yes. Animation. Once again, thank you for being on our show.
Yeah, thank you for having me here.
All right.
It was wonderful.
Signe Bauman. Signe Bauman, everybody. Computer, show her nicely to the door. Very good.
Show me out.
Oh, computer. That was insightful.
Yes.
So nice of her to invite us over.
I know.
To just talk about animation, help her with her animation projects.
Yeah, clean the house.
So nice and innocent in this world of, you know, crazy innuendo. I like that. Our guests are nice.
Our guests are nice. Yeah. Yeah.
I want to get back to something.
Back to what?
Back to Black.
Yeah.
Good song.
Yeah.
Amy Winehouse.
Yeah.
Isaac.
Uh-huh.
Now, he's troubled.
Yeah.
But he did bring up some interesting films that maybe for people who are listening, they haven't seen these or they don't know what they are. But the more I'm thinking of it, those are pretty significant films in kind of the history of animation.
Right. For people who want to know more about the history of animation.
Perhaps we can utilize Isaac's knowledge.
Yeah. Why not?
And say we put them up. Links to those.
Yeah.
I wonder what these filmmakers would think of the fact 100 years later
that we're done with films,
that we can put links to their work up on
a magic box. Yeah,
we're stealing their souls.
Yeah, they'd probably feel much the same way the people who first saw the very first moving picture felt,
like the
train pulling into the station,
right? They thought it was gonna crash into them.
And they sort of screamed and ran out.
Can you believe those people?
Yeah, I know.
But wimps.
I know, pussies.
Imagine showing those people Avatar.
No.
They would die. Their hearts would just give out.
They might think it's bad magic.
Especially the 3D aspect.
Yeah, uh-huh. Scary.
I wonder
a little scary
if that would be the equivalent of seeing the face of God.
It might be.
And by increasing our technology to a certain point, Alan, are we preparing ourselves mentally to take on these sights unseen before, so that we are ready to face quote unquote God? I'm saying whatever the mystery is of everything, if it's beyond human comprehension, could I hypothesize and say our technology at the rate it's advancing is showing us new visions that become commonplace? They become entertainment.
I think if anything, it's preparing us for future space travel.
Shall I go into my new architectural design for a spaceship?
No.
What's America's pastime?
Baseball.
What's its second pastime?
Hot dogs and hamburgers.
It's third.
Killing brown people.
What do you watch on TV on Thanksgiving besides the parade?
It's a Wonderful Life.
I'm talking about football. Not football.
Oh, you're talking about American football.
American football.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
My new idea for a spaceship would be a football-shaped spacecraft.
Pigskin. Made out of pigskin.
Diamond skinned. As
Diamond.
You know.
Oh, right.
Hollow tube, like a paper towel tube, right down the middle, hollow. It would rotate like a spiral through space, creating, let's say, half a G or a tenth of a G, and provide enough gravity so that we don't throw up all the time.
Okay.
But this hollow space in the middle, and it'd be gigantic, too, would be a hollow ship port for other ships to come in, dock in the middle. And then you go into the ship from the middle of the ship, this tube in the middle.
Right. It's like a subway station.
Like a subway station. And you go in one, you go out the other. Kind of like
the digestive tract.
The GI.
Yeah.
Here's the best part of this, though.
What?
Marketing.
Okay.
Now you have a football going through space.
Right.
People can get behind this. The average Joe, the average Jill.
Right.
They could say, football, I love football. I am going to support NASA in this.
Yeah, I love football. I would love to see a giant football flying through space, talking to other aliens.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, think of all the slogans. Hail Mary. Let it fly.
Well, I mean, that could be the name of the craft. Could be the Hail Mary.
Ooh, the Hail Mary. That's good. Football teams could advertise their logos on it.
Yeah.
The world would get behind that. At least America would get behind that.
Yeah.
Here's the best part of it, though.
What?
It gets into a fight with an enemy spacecraft.
Okay.
They shoot a heat-seeking missile right at it, which in space is easy because everything is cold.
Okay. All right. I just don't... All right,
the captain of the spacecraft has no choice but to maneuver the missile through the center portal hole and out the other end, thereby saving the football spaceship.
Pitch it to NASA or something.
I could throw it to NASA.
During your presentation, you could have a football with you and throw it to them.
Oh, that would be a great, you know what I mean? Pitch.
Yeah.
I'd be throwing up in the air.
Say, look at that. Look at that. Here.
I could start, what's America's pastime? They'd say baseball. I'd say, what's America's second favorite pastime? And you say hot dogs.
Yeah.
And then it'd be exactly what we just said. Yeah, yeah. Oh, my God. Leading to this very me saying these words right now. That is epic.
It is epic.
We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
But I don't tweet.
Don't tweet.
Don't tweet.
Because I don't have these small devices that you can text on. Mm-hmm, I don't do texting on principle.
You can Twitter on your computer.
I don't Twitter on my computer because I want to make a film.
I Twittered on my computer last week. It was an awful mess.